What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends Podcast, Larry Rifkin and John Krofcik.
How are you today?
Hello, Mr. Krofcik. I'm all right. I've got to tell you, last night I had a wonderful opportunity to see what positive aging is really all about. Really?
Positive aging. I like that. That sounds like one of your pledges.
Yeah.
Positive aging.
He's taking me back to my public television days, pledging. John, you know the 800 number that I had in front of me all the time?
Yes.
And the MasterCard Indicia? Well, I had them all surgically removed, so I'm
just
doing
the
okay.
Just the name, though. That's one you should give to them, positive aging.
But we used to do all of those self-help programs, as you know, and they were wonderful. But positive aging, no, it sounds more like something my daughter might have experienced when she took her master's in positive psychology.
Ah, there you go. Positive.
As opposed to, well, the type of deviant psychology that most people are studying.
Negative psychology.
Well, we've got a lot of deviants running around, need I say. But last night, I was in the midst of really something spectacular. I was sitting at an event honoring an older gentleman who himself is 92 years of age, and I was flanked and surrounded by his sister, who is 98.
Wow.
My cousin, who's 93.
Yep.
And another gentleman who survived the concentration camps, and he's 96.
That's amazing in itself.
I really should have done a focus group. I mean, how do you do this?
Yeah.
What do you need to imbue in me so that I can live a long, healthy?
I don't have longevity in my family, so.
Yeah, it's not one of our strong points.
It's kind of scary.
No, I know. But I've got to tell you, this is heartening. I mean, it really is. And they are all walking on their own account.
Yeah.
They're a little shaky from time to time.
Right.
But they are just absolutely delightful.
Yeah.
And I love my cousin. It's interesting because I've been taking him all kinds of places when I can.
Yeah, Willie. I like him. He's
oh,
funny.
You love Willie. And Willie loves you. You were trying to set him up with the right radio apparatus. But, you know, on the way back, I could tell, you know, he said, you know, this means so much to me. And it does, because I get him out for events. And I said to him, but Willie, it actually means more to me than it can ever mean to you, because I cling to that generation. And every time I lose a guy in my family of my age or of that age, I reach out for someone else. When I lost my uncle, who was the last reminder of my mother in the area, I really reached out for Willie, and
right.
We've been good buddies now for years.
Yeah,
you know that.
Oh, yeah. He's a great guy. He's a great guy.
Oh, so anyway, so that was a wonderful experience. It really was. And this is an interesting stage of life when I have a little bit more time on my hands and can dabble and do things.
You can think positive, so get some of that positive aging.
Well, I don't want to think about the implications of the electronic or electromagnetic pulse, EMP.
Yes.
Do you know what EMP is?
Electromagnetic pulse.
Yeah, you're an engineer. I mean, John, these attacks in terms of the potential of one of them.
Well, yeah. I mean, they could wipe out all our technology. You know, I mean, it's really scary when it comes down to this.
Well, look at Puerto Rico. We've done a lot of reporting on Puerto Rico. The minute you take down all the modern modes of communication, of heating and cooling, I mean, what do we become, honestly?
Yeah, you wonder. Well, you think about this and you think about nature. The sun could do this to us in a heartbeat. If we're in the right place and the sun lets go of one of its storms, you know, they could wipe out all our satellites, all our technology in a heartbeat.
You worried about, that or the EMPs? I mean, does that keep you up at night? Or, I mean, do you think about that? Do you imagine that that's really possible? Because everything in our lives is tethered to these things.
I know. Well, you wonder what happens when you lose.
I'm holding up my phone, by the way.
A few years back, we lost one of the satellites that I remember did all the credit cards and stuff, and people, you know, were going to the pumps and they couldn't use their credit card and they were kind of freaking out about that. So, I mean, you think about it, if everything was gone, what it would be like. I mean,
well, how do we deal with this? I mean, we've become so over reliant on all of these gizmos, on the digital age, on computers and chips and so forth. Have we vested too much in them?
Well, I think we have. Plus, we haven't done anything. You know, our electric poles out there are still from 1950, a lot of that technology. So we haven't looked into improving it to a point where we could be somewhat protected from it.
But how nervous, I mean, do people really get today? I'm thinking of this Equifax situation that we've got in the country, and virtually everyone or half of everyone has gotten hacked. And I don't see people running around panicking, well, saying, wait a minute, somebody could empty and drain out my life savings. Somebody could take my identity and begin running up a tab on me that would floor me. Somebody can take title to my home. I don't see people panicked about it.
No, and you're right. That's odd, you know. And look at Yahoo just came out, and
yeah.
I think they had
billions,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, just about everybody who had a Yahoo account has been hacked. I mean, so, but I guess it hasn't affected us really personally. I mean, it's been hacked, but we don't feel it yet. I mean, the people who are getting ripped off are feeling it, but it hasn't been the majority yet. So I think,
but maybe these guys just don't know what to do with it. But there has been a breach, whatever.
Yes.
Firewall.
Oh, well,
in our personal life.
Let's face it, anything we have online is they're reading it somewhere. Somebody's got it.
Yeah, in the Kremlin.
Yeah.
So what is
it's always the Russians.
The Russians. So what is it that you withhold from this digital world? What do you reluctantly hold on to?
Well, it's hard because, I mean, everything is done by line online now. You know, whether you do it or somebody else does it, all the transactions we do at the bank, whether we do them online ourselves, are done online. So everything's there. It's not like we can withhold anything, really.
Now, do you feel that these institutions to whom we have entrusted all of this information, all the vitals that somebody would need to really penetrate and make our lives quite ugly,
obviously,
do you think they've done?
No,
they
haven't kept
to
up with technology. Equifax is the prime example. These are people that should be protecting our, and you know, and I think the problem comes from our government. In Europe, they have laws that says our information is ours, and then we give it out to whoever we would give it out to. And if they break the law, then they're breaking the law. You know, we can have action. In this country, if they get breached, nobody takes responsibility. And I think this is, I think, honestly, we need some laws in place to protect.
Well, this
our,
is one of those areas where I think a
technology.
Lot of gridlock has set in, and some of this stuff about infrastructure security they have not dealt with because they are basically immobilized.
Well,
Congress
even,
is immobilized.
Even the CIA can't keep things. They gave away encryption to open.
Yeah,
stuff.
That's true.
I mean,
well,
it's just nuts.
John, you and I see it. We basically understand it, though it certainly is outside of my ken. I must admit that. But we are bringing to our audience today somebody who I think really is a recognized expert on infrastructure security. But he's also a great writer.
Well, this is EMPs. This is something. It's sort of like anything. We got to plan for emergencies. You know, we should have. We do stuff online, but we should keep hard copies of all our,
oh,
you know, our Vanguard, anything you do online. You should also have a hard copy. Well, a lot of people don't. A lot of people do it online. Boom, it's done. You know, I got, you know.
Oh, well, look at the young people today, John. I mean, the millennials, they would think that this conversation is between Fred and Willa Flintstone because, I mean, they can't imagine this. Their entire life is lived online.
Yeah, so it's, you know. But you should have at least a hard copy, so if they ever have to rebuild this stuff, at least you got something to say, hey, I had this amount of money.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Well, what happens the day after? What happens, really? Well, somebody has considered that, John, and his name is Dr. William Forshin. And many people know him because he's written some great best-selling novels about topics like this, and he knows exactly what the outcome of any EMP attack on our nation would be, and he really wanted to come by. He made himself available, even though he's really a big shot. I mean, 1 second after, 1 year after, the final day, all of these incredible books that he's written, and he wants to warn us that this is much more likely than unlikely over the sweep of time. And maybe we're all just kind of whistling past the graveyard, thinking this never could happen about EMPs. So I want to bring him on because this is a real threat in real time. And John, anything else to lead up to this conversation?
No, I think we've pretty much said it. We pretty much scared everybody out of their chairs. So well, maybe we should get the expert on.
Get back in your chairs, but stay offline. He is a PhD in military history, history of technology. He's worked for many senior government officials, and he's a great writer, and he's a really interesting presenter. And he's here today only on America Trends Podcast.
Dr. William Fortune is with us. Of course, many of you have read his books, 1 second after, 1 year after, the final day. And I know that you have said that a lot of people look at you as a doomsayer, but are you more just a realist in terms of what you see ahead of us in terms of possible conflagrations?
You know, there's a local newspaper here several years back. That was their cover story, Dr. Doomsday. Dr. Strangelove, Dr. Doomsday. No, I'm a realist. What got me started on this particular issue was a congressional report that came out in 2004, repeated in 2008, warning about the dire threat presented by an EMP attack. And a member of that committee, Roscoe Bartlett, who I befriended, I got to know, he really laid it out. He said, the problem is there's no constituency. There's no public awareness of what is an EMP. How does it work?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it such a threat that upwards of 90% of all Americans could perish? So I teach history. And one of the great things about teaching history is I use a lot of novels because you can get kids far more interested sometimes I'm reading a novel, and then after they do that, they go and say, okay, now I want you to read this book, or I want you to read that.
Mm.
So that was my goal, to take the threat of EMP, turn it into a very personalized story about a small town, actually the town I live in, and a fictional character and his family and how they have to struggle to survive. That's my answer to, am I a doomsayer or not?
Well, you also, though, do say that as a result of what you know, and sometimes knowledge can be a very powerful and a disruptive thing, you can be a little bit depressed. I mean, talking to your daughter about what may happen here.
Oh, yeah. It's a very depressing topic. but you still have to live every day, don't you?
Mm.
And be prepared. I want to see action in terms of hardening our infrastructure, a foreign policy that makes sure this doesn't happen. And at a very personal level, we want the people listening to your program. It's the old Boy Scout line, be prepared. Now, folks in Texas, as you and I are talking, there are some that are prepared to be able to get by for a week or two. There are many who are not, even though they live in a hurricane zone. And, oh, but it's been 10 years since we had a bad one. Don't worry about it. Well, now it's time to worry, but it's too late.
So the electromagnetic pulse, EMP, for people who really don't understand this, put it in context for us. We know of a lot of things that we have been warned about, but I think EMP is something that still is left to many who may be kind of on the fringe in terms of their thinking. We don't bring it into the mainstream very often, though your books have attempted to do that. But still, I think a lot of people who are in denial that something this cataclysmic could take place.
One of the problems with being a historian and going to the movies, I walk out or I say something loud and rude if the movie is horrifically inaccurate. The problem we have with the issue of EMP is Hollywood has done it to death. A really bad one was the Ocean's 11 movie of several years back,
mm-hmm.
where, okay, we're going to EMP Las Vegas, and the lights will be out for 2 minutes, and then after that, they come back on. It's never really been presented accurately and correctly. So that's important, because, again, as Roscoe Bartlett, the chair of the first committee, said, when people are truly aware of what it represents, maybe then we'll finally start getting action from the personal level to the federal level to ensure that this does not happen.
And explain what it is in relation to perhaps a cyber attack. We've heard a lot about cyber attacks, or a nuclear attack, and of course North Korea on a lot of people's minds. And you say, well, there is a piece to this that relates to what North Korea is building, and they may not have to be as far along as we think to be very detrimental to us in this way of the EMP.
All right, EMP, shorthand, electromagnetic pulse, created by detonating a nuclear weapon, not much bigger than the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs. You don't need a big megaton city buster. You burst it about 250 miles out in space above your target area, firing off three of these across the United States, eastern, central, and western. It sets up an electrostatic discharge in shorthand. It's actually a bit more complex than that. Hits the Earth's surface, feeds through our power transmission system, overloads them, blows high-tension lines literally off their pylons, shorts out the power delivery system. You have a blackout. Even the most liberal estimate is it would go for weeks or months. The more realistic ones, a report I attended, presentation about 5 years back, this team studied the 500 top generating systems east in the United States. Estimates for 80% would still be offline after 5 years. Mm. But guess what? We don't have the replacement part.
That sounds horrific. Would a nation that attempted to use this, and you've got to explain to us who might be most likely to use a weapon like this, would they be looked upon as pariahs in the world community if, in fact, there wasn't a nuclear fallout per se, but a destruction of all things that made life tenable for us in these modern times?
Well, remember the old line from Casablanca where the police officer said, round up the usual suspects? Okay, who are the usual suspects? North Korea, Iran. Both of them are surging with their nuclear programs. Defense Intelligence Agency only about 2-3 weeks back tripled the number of possible warheads, up 60. They're testing the ICBM systems, and I get furious with pundits who say, well, they still haven't perfected reentry shielding and guidance systems for a precision strike with an ICBM. You don't need those with an EMP gun. The warhead isn't going to reenter.
Mm.
If you're 400 miles off course, it really doesn't matter. It will still have a horrific laydown. So the big ones, North Korea, Iran. How would the rest of the world react? Well, I've been the world's policeman for 75 years. There are quite a few nations that would love to see us not go off or completely humbled. Because, the power of war abhors a vacuum. Nature does not want a vacuum. Other nations could move in to fill the power vacuum of this world. The whole paradigm then changes.
And what would the likely response be from a nation like ours, which has so much power and capability, if in fact something like this happened to us? And what would the capabilities be left of the American state if in fact we all went into virtual darkness?
All right, we'll go to my novel 1 second after. About three quarters of the way through the book, somebody says, hey, there's been a report out that we essentially turned North Korea and most of Iran in the glass, though I never actually say in the book who did it. And my main character says, yeah, but does that change anything here now? Is that going to bring our community back online? Is that going to bring back the millions of people who died? And there's an ethical issue in that as well.
Mm.
Let's say North Korea did it tomorrow. What if, say, we blanketed North Korea with nuclear weapons and reply. Who are we killing? Are we killing the leadership? Are we killing that psychotic who runs the country? He'll be in a bunker a couple thousand feet deep. Most of the population on the surface is blazed. We do it to Iran. The vast majority of Iranians want nothing to do with their government. Do it to them? There's the horrific irony. It's no longer Adolf Hitler in a bunker 75 feet deep with Russians closing in. It's 2,000-foot deep bunkers and command systems that can survive a full-out nuclear strike.
And what is our take as an offensive weapon, our own electromagnetic pulse technology, which obviously must be startling and so substantial. Yeah. I mean, what do we think of it? Is it something that the world community has begun to really talk about? Because we don't hear much about it. Have we put sanctions against this kind of activity, as we have had treaties for other types of weapons? Where are we in the stage of trying to make certain that this is not used, you know, by other countries or by ourselves?
You're asking great questions, and that's the first time I've been asked that question across 500 interviews, and it's a great one. We have to go back to 1961-62. During those years, those 2 years, we and the Soviets conducted the first test of EMP capability. Ours, well, you can look it up, called Starfish Prime. The Soviet test 184. Our weapon detonated over Johnson Island, 500 miles from Hawaii, took out part of the power grid of Hawaii. A year later, we have a test ban treaty. There have been, and I'm not one of them, but there have been some people who have projected part of the driving force of the test ban treaty, which banned testing of all weapons in the atmosphere or in space, was to put a lid on EMP, because it truly was a frightful first-strike decapitation weapon. You no longer needed 1,000 ICBMs soaring back and forth over the North Pole. Pop the EMPs over your opponent. There was a film that came out in the mid-80s about nuclear war, Jason Robards. They actually did use it in that film. And that horrific moment when, I think, with Kansas City is destroyed, there's a first air burst, well, a space burst, about 5 seconds beforehand, and all the cars on the highway shut down. Surprised me that they did that. Do we use it, think of it as an offensive capability? Oh, yeah. But with most nations, that's mutual assured destruction. You do it to us, we can do it to you, and nobody wins. But that paradigm doesn't work with North Korea and Iran, or even handing their weapons off to some terrorist organization.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, I know you have written about that and the possibility with ISIS and al-Qaeda. Again, if an actor like North Korea did not want the full umbrage of the United States to come down on them, would they be prone, wanting our destruction nonetheless, to hand this off in the way that you suggest?
That's a frightful scenario. I've seen reports, and it was even mentioned in the congressional studies. You can mount several Scud, just basically upgraded Scud missiles, onto a container ship, slip it into the Gulf of Mexico, fire them, and then blow the ship up so all evidence is gone, as typical with some terrorist organization. There could be a third-party player in all of it. We've all seen the videos and the reports of what ISIS does. Imagine ISIS with several nuclear warheads and the capability to launch them. What do you think they would do?
And so why has this, I hate to even broach this, but why has this not happened yet?
From your lips to God's ear, thank God it has not yet happened. I felt a terrible sense of urgency getting the book out, and that was back in 2009. Now, are we living on borrowed time? I pray no, we're finally going to address this issue. And the foreword to that book I wrote at the end, I hope 30 years from now, my name is forgotten, and my daughter grew up living in peace. I don't have an answer as to why it has not happened yet. But you buy a house, and you say, no, I don't need fire insurance. $1,000 a year for a $250,000 house? You really want to live like that? Besides, you couldn't get a mortgage.
What are the cyber attacks that we are seeing around the world, and of course that are a big part of a conversation in America today about the impact on our election, correlate that to where we could be as it relates to EMP? I mean, is this a harbinger? Is this a corollary to what it is we're talking about?
Absolutely, yes. My college, the college I teach at, Moncrief College, and this is not an advertisement, it's just I teach at Moncrief. We've instituted a top-notch cybersecurity majors, you know, majoring in that. It's become a very hot topic. Is that a harbinger? Oh, yeah. It shows as well just how absolutely vulnerable we have become to any kind of cyber hit that can shut down part of the grid. Has it been a component of warfare? Well, ask the Ukrainians versus the Russians. Ask the Georgians, meaning the Georgia in the Middle East, versus the conflict, I think it was Georgia and Russia several years back.
Mm-hmm.
This is a new type of Pearl Harbor. Take off your opponent's infrastructure, take down their power grid, take down their computer system. That's a new Pearl Harbor.
Explain what the Russians did to the Georgians.
They hacked into their systems. They cut up command and control systems, banking systems, personal interactions, created chaos. And the same thing has been hitting Ukraine as well, and it's very underreported.
And so
there was also a rumor, speculation a couple of years back that the Russians did sort of a test run on it. I believe it was Estonia. It was one of the Baltic republics. Just to mess with their system and see what could be done. So you sit in a cybersecurity facility, I do at my college, and you watch real-time attacks, like missiles flying back and forth. They're just blurring across the screen. There's thousands of them going on every day. Most are just those lousy, cheap hackers trying to get at your bank account. Some of them are potentially quite serious, such as what hit a number of hospitals in Great Britain a while back, you know, the ransomware.
Now, you tell us, of course, that there have been two studies done that were bipartisan by Congress, 2004, 2008, on the threat of an EMP attack. And they have confirmed that a nation-crippling strike would require as few as three weapons detonated over the eastern, central, and western United States. What has followed on from that? I mean, that is a long time ago in terms of technology, 2008.
Maybe you better have the delete button ready because you might think you're interviewing somebody with Tourette syndrome. It has been frightfully frustrating. As a response to that, twice in the lower house Congress, what's known as the SHIELD Act was passed. Good heavens, I can actually say something bipartisan got passed. One up to the Senate. In one case, one senator killed it because it didn't have the perks that she wanted. That was Murkowski from Alaska. There is another bill right now, House Bill 2417. 2417, though maybe my dyslexia had the wrong one, it's 2147. Anyhow, the bill is there. I actually reviewed it for one of the committee members. Guess what? It's stalled in committee. Now, the president has well put out a mandate to start beefing up our system. Guess what? It's stalled. There are many political issues dividing us that we should be angry about, but there's absolute gridlock with Congress, and they go out on vacation when we have so many issues to deal with. Is up.
How can they, in any good conscience, knowing what looms out there, debating endlessly now, you know, what happened during this 2016 election, recognizing that there's a tie between this and something that could actually, well, that could take down our democracy, but this could take down our civilization, and be willing to rest while these things pend. What is it that these bills would do?
Frustrating to a certain degree. It's some funding, yet, of course, more studies and such. So H.R. 2417, if I have the number correct, actually was mandating DOE, DOD, Homeland Security, to actually start implementing, start getting funding, which we're talking about would require into the trillions of dollars. Key thing, replacement parts. And when we hear the president talking about infrastructure upgrading, good heavens, this would be a great part of that infrastructure bill to start significantly upgrading our power grid. Of course, the power grid's privately owned, but working in coordination and mandating certain changes.
We have talked, of course, about these various defense shields as they relate to trying to blunt a nuclear attack. We'll have 10 minutes, we'll have 25 minutes, whatever it is. I mean, where are we in the ability to blunt an EMP attack thus far? I mean, if it happened tomorrow, God forbid, where are we in terms of our ability to react to it, to defend ourselves as opposed to destroy the other party? We know we have that capability.
Regarding North Korea, we have two lines of defense. We undoubtedly have, at this moment, Aegis-class cruisers that are lying off the coast that can knock a missile down in the first minutes of firing and loft through the atmosphere. The only other backup, then, is we do have ABM, anti-ballistic missile systems, poised in Alaska, and I believe also in California. I think we have a full battery of about 50. But estimates are they would only be 50% effective. As pointed out by one of the members of the congressional report, you know, somebody flipped a launch system into the Gulf of Mexico, we're naked. We have nothing. And we have nothing in the Gulf of Mexico or the East Coast that could deter such an attack.
So there are various parts of the United States that are better positioned to address this than others?
Yes, West Coast, but even then, remember, 50% success rate in a real-time attack. Not a test, a real-time attack.
And there are states that I know, in the absence of federal activity, they've been trying to take their own responsibilities unto themselves. Is that practical for a state to really try to blunt such an attack on their own?
Well, defense, of course, is a national federal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some states that are at least starting at looking at mandating the power system to start infrastructure upgrading. I know there's an incredible representative in Maine who's been pushing that. I went to two hearings in Raleigh about 4 years ago, but the industrial industry dismissed it. I first wrote the book, I was thinking federal level. Oh, gosh, people will read the book, they'll call their congressmen, things will start getting done. I'm not taking the exact opposite approach in terms of you and I are talking to quite a few people at this moment. Start thinking about being prepared to go 30, 60, or 90 days without electricity. Start simple. Start inexpensive. Just get some extra cans in. Gradually build up. Every citizen thought the way the survivors of our Great Depression thought, in terms of having that extra supplies on hand, it would do a lot to enhance survivability and, in fact, make the rebuilding a bit easier.
Having seen some early hurricanes or late hurricanes or snowstorms up here in the Northeast, and seeing how many of us responded with an outage of 3 days, it does not give me a lot of comfort.
I live in Asheville, North Carolina, up in the mountains. You should see what happens when there's 3 inches of snow. And, you know, Sandy, Katrina.
Yes.
Some people compare it to that. But my little college, the day after Katrina, we had a tractor-trailer load of emergency supplies my students had put together, the whole college, to send to a church down near New Orleans. All of America turned out to help, because that's what we do. We're American. But for a nationwide event, there ain't going to be help coming from Kentucky, North Dakota, or anywhere. Everybody's going to be scrambling on their own, trying to survive.
By the way, our producer, engineer, and great partner in this endeavor, America Trends, John Krofsik, has a question for you.
Well, I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
With these ships colliding
lately with all this technology. Do you think that's some type of EMP weapon that's possibly on some boat that's nearby, locking up the steering and whatever else on our ships?
Yeah, I was just talking to somebody who's very savvy on military technology issues a couple of weeks back, and how the current administration, at least there are some people who are saying, you know, we have to keep remembering we might be a military that will have to fight without computers. Remember 5-6 years ago, they were ballyhooing the soldier of the year 2025, and the guy is just like a cyborg.
Right, right.
Yes.
You hit him with an EMP, he's flesh and blood again. They're very dangerous environment.
Because it just seems kind of odd to me with all the technology we have and anti-avoidance systems we can put in cars. How is it possible our boats are crashing?
Well, let me ask you, would you get into a driverless car, put on a blindfold? And go
not, me.
Not me. Not me. Not me. Heck no. Especially in New Jersey at 5 in the afternoon. Or Boston.
You get that fatal error.
But to his point, I've got one of these cars that will stop if it senses something in front of you. And somebody wanted me to come close to a dumpster the other day, and the car would not let me go. So, I mean, we're developing some incredible technologies. So to John's point, is it possible the entire Pacific fleet is under attack?
Doubtful, but that scenario has been presented. The increasing drive with some of our more modern, the new ships coming off the construction, that they're very, very high tech. There can always be a glitch. There can always be human error. In the end, it's a human decision process that I still trust the most.
Dr. Forshin, when people think about this issue, and your name really is synonymous with getting us to think about this by using, fiction, 1 second after, 1 year after the final day, what book should people read if they really wanted to catch up to some of the concerns that you have?
Oh, gosh. I wish I could remember the gentleman's name. I just talked to him this morning. He had a book come out last week. I feel like an idiot for not remembering it because it's getting very good reviews. He was on Hannity last week. Maybe Google up Hannity EMP author. The other one I really like is Ted Koppel's Lights Out. Very good analysis of how the technology can be destroyed. So beyond that, definitely go to the Congressional Report. They might be slightly dry reading, but they're loaded with facts. You can Google them up simply by notice. Google, get on the computer, all of that. That's part of our lives.
While we can.
While we can. And just Google up Congressional Report EMP 2004-2008. Department of Energy put out an eye-opener for me a couple of years ago about infrastructure vulnerability, where I learned that the average component in our electrical infrastructure is 40 years old. And also that statistic of only 15% replacement parts made in the United States. And the information's out there. Novels are a great way to get the personal touch. And then this old history teacher here says, okay, then go out and get the real stuff and read that as well.
All right. Well, your books, of course, have to be included. 1 second after, 1 year after, and the final day. In closing, I mean, what would a man like yourself, as knowledgeable as you are, a recognized expert on infrastructure, security, military history, I mean, you've got such an incredible background to really express yourself on this issue. I mean, what would not surprise you in the next 10 years? I mean, is there something as difficult as it is to tell us, is there something that you would not be surprised, or would you be surprised that we're not facing at least something like an EMP attack? Would that surprise you more than if we did suffer one?
Well, you remember about right as the Cold War ended, there was that famous article that came out saying the end of history.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the peace dividend, and as we hit the 21st century, we're all going to eat granola and things get peace a chance. We're not seeing that in 2017, are we? Nothing. I'm a historian. Yeah, to be optimistic, there are moments when humanity can really reach to the greatest heights of goodness. But there's also some very dark people out there. Nothing would surprise me at this point. So I pray that 30 years from now I'm forgotten and it never happened. But you remember the old line, trust in the Lord to keep your powder dry.
And with the exponential development of technologies that are often wonderful technologies when used for noble purposes, and the most destructive things we've ever been able to do, to kill ourselves over 10,000 times, I mean, with all that technology, doesn't that just accelerate the potential here?
Yes, it does. I believe it was Jack Kennedy. It was either Eisenhower or Jack Kennedy commented more than once about the decision-making process of war used to be a factor of months, weeks, and then days. Now it's down to 20 minutes. Once the ICBM came along, go, no, go is 20 minutes. And Jack Kennedy had a good comment that the thing he feared the most was not war by calculation, but war by madness or miscalculation.
Well, I think when we talk about, you know, the stability of our leadership and other leaders, that's what people are talking about, that potential for miscalculation.
Yes.
Well, I thank you so much for being with us today on AmericaTrendsPodcast.com. Chilling, but you're giving us something really important to think about. And we thank you for sharing it with our listeners.
Thanks for taking the time. Thanks for getting a very good message, and this has been one of the best interviews I've had in a very long time.
Oh, thank you
very much.
Thank you so much.
If you like this episode, please leave us a kind rating or review. I'm on my hands and knees. Please do it on iTunes, because your review is really critical for us to continue providing this podcast. And John, I know that iTunes looks at this. They want to make certain that we have some ranking, some visibility, and that we're getting some traffic, and then they give you better positioning.
Absolutely. And this way, it'll put us in the forefront so you can find us much easier on your iPhone or Android, whatever you may be using.
And they may even send you out an alert. So please, if you can, don't miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. And, John, they can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com.
And also subscribe on our website.
Oh, absolutely.
We send out a little blurb, and we can also take your emails there at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. That's another way to get us.
And we do not sell or share
no
our
spamming,
lists.
Nothing.
Well, I don't know. Does anybody want our lists? I don't know, but we don't do it.
Good question.
Even if they asked us.
Even
nobody's
if they
asked us. But.
Right.
And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. We're getting very active on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms, and John, this is really easy, at Trends Podcast. That's it.
That's real easy.
You like that? Did
yeah,
you get that?
I got that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to check it out now. I'm going to have to tweet it.
We want to thank you, of course, personally for subscribing. And we also would like to get some of your ideas and questions for future episodes of America Trends Podcast. And that's important, too, because we're all over the map. Our interest editorially in the future, John, has no bounds. But we want to know what it is that you'd like to hear from us, if there was a segment that you'd like to see us follow up on, or if there's something in depth that you'd like us to deal with. Please let us know that,
yeah,
too.
We're looking at the future. There's so much we can look at.
Yeah, and the topics that we've dealt with, I mean, we have gotten such incredible guests over the recent period, but they're only going to come to us if they know we've got an engaged and interactive audience.
Absolutely.
So it's really important that you become part of this podcast in so many different ways that we're sharing with you today.
You're absolutely right. We need your support and your help and your reviews.
And your ideas.
And ideas.
Or questions on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or using the hashtag Trends Podcast. You can also add an email address if you have a public one that you'd like us to give out.
Yeah, good. And you know what? You know what? We didn't mention Amazon.
Oh, yes. We have an Amazon store.
Yes.
And so if you go up, you don't have to buy the things that might be highlighted at that particular time. You can buy any book, and there's some benefit that comes back to us.
Just put what you're looking at in the little search engine block there, and it'll take you right to Amazon, and it'll help us out?
Absolutely. And it doesn't really cost you anything more because they have built that into their pricing structure. So we get a little taste and you get more programming like this and you get the item that you were looking for. So it works for all of us.
It's a win-win.
Absolutely. Win-win-win.
Win-win-win.
So for more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. And again, you can find John and I here in our studio performing as best we can for you.
That's right. And let us out.
What's that?
Let us out.
Let us out. No one is. Hey, listen, thank you so much for joining us today on America Trends. We'll see you next time.
We hope to hear from you soon.
Oh, by the way, we are posting all the time, and we're posting on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Good point.
So just be aware, if you're looking for new episodes, they're coming on Tuesdays and Thursdays. When you wake up, before you go out on your jog or your walk and you want to take us with you, we'll be there for you.
Very good.
All right. Have a great day.